Hey guys, welcome back to the Wrestling Podcast, and we're here with a special interview. You know, we have Kyle Dake. Kyle, how are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So how's your day been going?
It's been good. I had a workout this morning, ended up reading a couple books to my daughter before lunchtime, and then I was able to get out and go sit in a tree stand for a few hours.
So how did the tree stand go?
It was all right. I saw a couple. I didn't have a clear shot, but it was fun. It's always exciting to get out there.
Yeah, for sure. So you were talking about how you're reading books with your daughter earlier. So you've recently had another kid, other than Ella Jo. What's it like being like kind of a new father, and just kind of tell us what it's like.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Ella Jo is she's almost two. So she is running around like crazy. She's picking up things really fast. She's super smart. She must get it from her mom. And she does a really good job helping take care of her little sister, Amelia. So Amelia was born in October. And I don't know if you might be able to hear in the background.
Yeah. Right
now. She's a little hungry, I think. But being a dad has been awesome. You know, I enjoy every second of it. And, you know, it's normally, you know, before this, I would try to fill my time with other things, you know, reading and learning about health and wellness and fitness and all these different things. And, I would become absorbed with that. And now I'm learning, you know, health and wellness for my kids and, you know, what I need to be doing for them and help their development and, you know, maybe certain things that I need to do for them, but also need to do for myself. And, you know, it's always a learning process, but it's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. I really enjoy watching my, there's Ella Jo right there. I really enjoy watching my wife, Megan, with the two girls. It's a lot of fun.
Is it harder when they start learning to walk and move?
Yeah, Ella Jo, it's harder and it's easier at the same time. You don't have to carry them everywhere.
Yeah.
But Ella Jo still likes to be picked up, and she always say, "Daddy, uppie, dance," and she wants to dance with me all the time. And anytime there's music on, she just wants to dance. And if we need to go somewhere, like, hey, I'll race you to the tree or whatever, you know, I'll race you to the car. And it's just a fun watching her sprint to the car and try to get in. Or she's starting to get tall enough now to where she can open up doors, which is scary, but also pretty cool at the same time. Every morning we feed our dogs, and I keep the dog food out in the garage. So I open up the garage door, close the garage door so it doesn't get too cold in the house. And Ella Jo started locking me out. And the first time she did it, my wife was actually in the bathroom, and Ella Jo locked me out. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm stuck out here. Like, hopefully Megan's not too long. So I'm like, Ella Jo, unlock it. And she's just laughing, loving it, thinking it's hilarious. And then finally Megan comes out and lets me in like a couple minutes later. But she's fun to try to chase around and keep up with.
Oh man, that must have been crazy. So Coach Mike Gray also has another kid, little Declan. Do Ella Jo and Declan ever play?
Oh yeah. So Declan is 6 months older. Uh-huh. He's quite a bit taller, but he comes over to the house. So I have wrestling mats in my garage, and at the beginning of quarantine, he would come over to the house, and him and Ella Jo would just be running around on the mats, and both of them love, you know, Declan loves coming to wrestling practice, and Ella Jo just loves wrestling. She'll wrestle with her stuffed animals, everything. She tries to wrestle with Amelia, but obviously she's not big enough yet. But so Ella Jo will always try to take Declan down, and Declan will take her down no problem, just because he's, you know, 6 months at that age is a lot,
yeah.
You know, a lot of difference in terms of development physically. And so Ella Jo is trying to keep up with Declan all the time, which is a lot of fun to watch and see. And they have a great time. They love spending time with one another. We're actually going to go have dinner with them tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Nice. That's awesome. Can Ella Jo ever get Declan?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. She gets Declan. She'll, maybe Declan helps her out a little bit, or when Ellie Jo catches him off guard, she gets him. But for the most part, Declan kind of beats her up.
Okay.
She'll get him one day.
Yeah.
Once Ellie Jo's a little older.
Yeah, I'll give Declan about another year until Ellie Jo can beat him up.
Really? You got Declan for a year?
You yeah, training
gotta,
her?
Got to train Ellie Jo for a year, and then she'll be ready to rock and roll.
Yeah. All right, so let's get started with Corona, which has kind of been like going around the world for the last over half a year now. Mm-hmm. How has COVID affected you overall in your training situation?
You know, it's been a big hindrance. There's been a lot of tournaments, a lot of preparation that's been pushed back, canceled, and you know, having to navigate through that and figure out different things to do to keep your training fresh and to keep yourself sharp. Fortunately, I have a lot of good guys around me. I got Gabe, who's a junior bronze medalist. He's way better now than he was in college. Yanni, obviously a two-time national champion. We got Evan Henderson, who's in that eight-man bracket for Flo, and he's always been a top 10 guy on the senior level ladder. Then we got Max Dean, who's a U23 world team member. So I got plenty of partners. We got a bunch of young guys coming through too as well. And then, you know, there'll be a couple times where I'll travel, you know, down to see David or, you know, train with a couple of those guys. And so I've had to make some adjustments, which has been, you know, been tough, mostly because I haven't been able to compete as much as I would like to. You know, leading into the start of the pandemic, I was right on track to reach the number of matches I wanted before the Olympic Games. And since then, it's kind of put a halt to it. So I'm having to, you know, find these little matchups here and there to where I can, you know, get my matches in before the trials. And then obviously after the trials, hopefully there'll be another tune-up tournament that we can go to, and then the Olympic Games.
Yeah, for sure. So would you say COVID, like the training situation, has affected you overall in a negative way or a positive way?
It's hard to say. I think there's ups and downs for, you know, there's positives and negatives to the whole thing. You know, you try to make everything work for you. And, you know, I've been able to spend a lot more time, focusing on other things and, you know, fixing my technique, fixing my biomechanics, making myself, you know, just move better. But also on the other side is like, I'm not able to compete. So that's been the toughest part, is not being able to step on the mat and test the skills that I've been working on. So there's a little bit of give and take there. But obviously you make the most of it. And, I think overall, this has probably, you know, been a beneficial experience for me. I've been able to spend a lot more time with my family and you know, I've been able to put in some serious work. So,
yeah, for sure.
So the event that just happened was the RTC Cup, where you and Gabe Dean was first listed as a wrestler there. What happened to make you back out? And overall, what did you think of your RTC, the Spartan RTC there?
Yeah, Gabe and I weren't allowed to wrestle just because of COVID, so we weren't going to be able to make it, and then. Which kind of stunk, because, you know, we kind of chalked ourselves up as, you know, two of the more likely guys to win their matches. Obviously, you step out on the mat and compete, and you always think you're going to
dominate everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, we thought our first four weight classes we were solid, and
yeah, for sure.
You know, we had two other guys that we thought that, you know, could win matches and do really well. So. But, you know, when we had to pull out, we got some replacements, and those guys wrestled pretty well. And mm-hmm. I think that they wrestled really well. Obviously, Yanni and Vito both stepped up and both went undefeated. They had really great tournament, and it was very valuable experience for them, you know, being able to – they wrestled really good guys, you know. Vito had – Nashon twice, Darian Cruz once, and then I forget where the other matchup was. Zach Sanders, maybe.
Yeah.
So he had, you know, all those guys are studs, and mm-hmm. he went out and performed at a really high level. obviously Yanni had to wrestle against James Green twice. And then he had Sammy Sasso, who's really tough. And then who's the last one?
Ooh.
Tariq Wilson, was it? No. Yeah, I think it was Tariq. Wolfpack. Yanni got some really good matches too. So it was good to watch him. And then we had one of our really young guys, his name is Jacob Cardenas, and he's a beast. He's gonna be really good for us. And you know, he had to go out and wrestle Ty Walls twice, Colin Moore, and Mike Machiavello. So it was a tough day for him. But wrestled Tim Hall. That's who he wrestled. He wrestled Mach. But it was a great experience for him. It was fun to watch, and hopefully they do another one. Sooner rather than later, because I think everyone had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, that was like awesome just to watch overall. Just like there were so many good matchups, it was just like really fun to watch.
They need to get the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club in there too next time.
I know. I think we can take them. I think.
Yeah, especially if you have. I agree. I think I got you guys winning, especially if you and Dean go and you have Vito, Yanni. That would.
Mm-hmm.
That's some crazy matchups. Vito and probably like Gilman.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everybody, that's just good.
Yanni Zane, Meenolf, Dean Taylor. You know, those are gonna be really good matchups.
They can they don't even need any of the other teams. They could just do, you know,
get a dual meet set up between Nittany Lion Wrestling Club and Spartan Combat RTC.
Yeah. So I have a question. This is kind of like a weird question, but is Spartan Combat RTC sponsored by like Spartan Racing?
Yeah. So Spartan Race is trying to get more involved in different areas, because they were really affected by the pandemic, not being able to have their races and have people come together and, you know, go through all those courses and stuff. So they've had to get creative and expanding their market and figure out different avenues to reach more people. And Joe is a big fan. Joe DeSena, he's the CEO of the company. He's a big fan of wrestling and big fan of Cornell wrestling in particular. And he wanted to help and get involved and for the past several years. And finally this year was the year that we were able to put something together. And he has a bunch of big plans for Spartan Combat. And I think they're going to be pretty cool leading up to it in the next year or two.
Yeah. That's awesome. after the Spartan RTC, you and JB had a little bit of a Twitter battle. Can you talk about what that was about and who do you think won the battle?
I think I won the battle, of course.
I think the ending tweet was,
that was a tough one. There's always a little back and forth between us. We're both really competitive. We're both going for the same exact thing. We're going for that Olympic team spot and that Olympic gold medal. Mm-hmm. So, he thought that I was ducking competition. I don't know why he would think that, but I think he was just trying to start stuff.
Yeah, me too. I don't really think he thinks that, like, any of those guys would be able to beat you. I don't know.
Hey, so why is he saying you duck? Why didn't he show up on a team?
Seriously.
Yeah, he should have. He's there's a couple reasons for that.
You know what I mean?
All right. So do you think trash talking is good to build like hype around the sport and grow the sport of wrestling?
I think people just need to be authentic. And speak their mind and try to speak honestly. And you know, there's some people that try to just trash talk to trash talk, and
like Pat Downey.
Yeah, and it's just not, you know, they're not trying to be, they're not being authentic, they're not being true to who they are as a person. And there are certain things where you do try to hype things up and you try to get more people involved and you try to create some hype behind the event. And the model works, people doing that works. And it just gets people excited because they're like, they pick a side, they're like, oh, I want to see this now. And it's just more media for people to look at. And, there's so many options for people to spend their time with now. Like you guys as kids, you guys could be watching a podcast, playing Fortnite, you know, watching TV, watching YouTube, you know, there's so many options. When I was a kid, you know, I could play outside. When it got dark, I couldn't really do anything else. I would have to watch sports. So I would just watch the TV and whatever was on was what I was watching. So, you know, you kind of got to go and grab that attention from somebody. You know, there's obviously diehard fans who are going to, you know, watch me every time I step on the mat.
Yeah.
There's other people who are like, oh, you know, there was this other UFC event on or Bellator event on, you know, maybe I want to watch this football game or whatever. You got to get them excited and get them amped up for an event and, you know, make them want to watch you compete. So, I think that it was a, you know, what happened to wrestling this year has been overall great for the sport. You know, being able to create these events for senior level athletes, hopefully we are paving the way for guys like you who eventually, you know, maybe, you know, you don't quite reach your Olympic dream or, you know, you get the senior level, but you still have a means to survive. You know, there are several guys that I know who are really talented coming out of college, but they just need a little bit more development in order to, you know, make a national team or make a world team or make an Olympic team. And sometimes they just can't do it. They got to go into coaching and to make money for their family or whatever. And it's in the past, it's been a little bit more difficult, but now with the RTCs and then also these major events going on, we can start to make a living and live a lifestyle that's conducive to being the best in the world.
Yeah, especially since, like, you guys are sponsored by Spartan. Like, if more people get, like, sponsored, that's just, like, more money coming into the sport and just better for the sport overall.
Certainly.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about your incredible career at Cornell, you know, 4-time national champion, 4 different weights. Talk about the process to get there. Like, tell us your whole story. How did you start wrestling? What clubs, coaches, or what other highlights you would say brought your way up there?
So I started out when I was a baby. My dad was a NCAA All-American for Kent State in Ohio. My grandfather was a coach at Ball State in Indiana. Bowling Green. Bowling Green. My dad went to Ball State first. They dropped their program. They went to Kent State. Anyway, doesn't matter. They were my coaches. So when I was a kid, my dad was coaching at Cornell and then Ithaca College right next door. And I was wrestling my whole life. My grandpa was the high school coach and the middle school coach. And then my dad was the high school coach. And I had just been involved in wrestling for my entire life. And I was really good at it. I was also really small. So when I was in sixth, seventh, eighth grade, I was just really small person, but I couldn't make the varsity team. So I could compete at a high level when I was in seventh grade. I was too small for the weight class. I weighed 80 pounds. The minimum weight was 88. And then I had to wrestle 96. So I was wrestling these guys who were cutting down from, you know, 105 or, you know, 106 coming down to 96 pounds. And they just overpowered me. And I had to figure out a way, like, how can I navigate, you know, their size and their strength advantage that they have over me? Well, I had to have really good position and I had to be technically really sound. And I had to have a lot of fight. So those are 3 things that I really prided myself on because those were how I was going to win at those lower levels or when I was younger. And then finally, when I was in ninth grade, I was a legitimate 96 pounder. So I weighed probably 100 pounds. Really probably even less than that, probably between, you know, 97 and 98. And, you know, I'd have practice and then wake up the next morning and be on weight. But you know, every year after that, I just got a little bit bigger. The next year I went 112. The following year I jumped up to 130. I probably should have been at 119 that year. But I messed up certifications. And then my senior year I was at 140. But during that time I was always, you know, I only had 2 losses in high school, my freshman year in the state semis and then my junior year in the finals. My sophomore year, junior year, and senior year, I went to back then there was only really one or two national tournaments, 1 folk style national tournament, and then they had Fargo for freestyle and Greco. So for the folk style nationals, I went to sophomore nationals, junior nationals, and senior nationals and won them all. And then I made a junior world team in Greco my junior year of high school, right after my junior year of high school, and went to the world championships then, and then came back my senior year, wrestled, won the states, won the nationals, then ended up going to Cornell. And that year, that gap, that summer between March of 2009 and November of 2009, that time frame was one of my biggest developmental stages of my career, being at Cornell. I had way more training partners. When I was in high school, when I was at 140 pounds, I had to wrestle with our 171 and 189 pounder, because that's the only partners I could get that could push me. You know, I had some lighter guys that I could wrestle with, and they were good, but they weren't at that level that I needed.
Yeah.
And so then I went to college, and then I had partners everywhere. You know, I had Troy Nickerson, Mike Gray, Mac Lunas, DJ Ma, like all of these guys who were NCAA Americans and, you know, national champions, and people that really could push me. And I just hated losing. I couldn't stand it. Even in the room, like, I was just like, I need to get better. And that's kind of where it took off. I launched my career off. I had my first match in a Cornell singlet. I was wrestling the number 4 ranked guy in the country. Ended up having a comeback victory, body locked into his back. Place went nuts. It was so loud in there. Our camera broke.
Dang.
Yeah, it was a crazy time. And then after that, I was just growing. I was, like I said, I was small. I was kind of a late bloomer. So I was my freshman year, I was still a little boy. And you know, I was getting better, but I was growing. So I grew, I was getting taller. My shoulders were getting wider, my legs were getting bigger, and I cut a ton of weight my freshman year. And then I was like, you know what, after this year, I'm definitely going up to 149, like no question about it. So that next year I ended up going up to 149, and same thing happened. I got a little bit taller, a little bit wider. My legs got a little bit bigger, and I was cutting a ton of weight. And I was like, I am definitely going up to 157 after this year, because this is ridiculous. And, you know, I went up to 157 and won my junior year. I was like, I could probably go 57 again next year. So, you know, I'm not too worried about it, but there's also the Olympic Games here. So the weight class is 163, but it's night before. So, you know, I'm just going to gain a little bit of weight and, you know, try to make an Olympic team. And again, my junior year in college, I still wasn't, you know, I wasn't anywhere where I needed to be the best in the world. And then my senior year, Coach Cole comes, you know, brings me into his office and is like, hey, I think our team's a little bit better if you go 165. And I said, okay. He goes, you want to wrestle David Taylor at the All-Star Classic. I had wrestled him at the Olympic team trials the summer before. I was like, yeah, for sure, I'll wrestle him. And, you know, that sparked the whole thing. It's like, okay, Kyle's going to go 165. This is his fourth weight class. Can he win? He's going up to take on David Taylor, who's a, you know, Hodge Trophy winner, national champion, two-time finalist. Like, he's, you know, wrestling under Cale Sanderson, looks just like him out there when he's competing. Like, what's going to happen? And it kind of, that was like the hype train that got behind it. And I was up for the challenge. I was ready to rock and roll. And, you know, the rest is kind of history after that.
Yeah. So let's talk that NCAA finals match, you versus David. Do you remember your thoughts when he first got that? I think that was an ankle pick the first 30 seconds.
So I went out there with, you know, I went out there with this idea that I was going to control the hand fight, that I was going to rough him up a little bit and make sure, you know, make sure that I was moving and getting to my attacks. And, you know, so I'm so concentrated on the hand fight that I don't realize that he sets my feet really well. So he set my feet, and the first time he didn't take it. The second time he set my feet, and then he took it. And I was, you know, my reaction was, my foot stuck. I can't move my foot back. I'm going to have to try to bail out of this. I ended up trying to bail out. I didn't get to where I wanted to. He got the takedown and he kind of threw me out of bounds.
Yeah.
And I got back to the center and I was like all fired up. And I was like, okay, just relax, you know, get your escape. You're all right. And then, you know, we can keep going. Because in my mind, I thought, okay, even if I give him the takedown, I get an escape, I go back down in the second period. I get another escape. It's 2-2. He goes down in the third period. I ride him out for the whole third period. I win 3-2. Easy peasy. You know, no problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then that, you know, so I'm going back to the center. I'm like, okay, let me just get my escape. So I got my escape and I thought it was a reversal. Challenge didn't work out. We were just neutral on our feet. So now I'm sitting there and, again, hand fighting a little bit, not as intense with the hand fight because I'm like, I can't let him set my feet again. So yeah. I'm moving with him, and I see a couple opportunities open up. And, you know, I get to a low ankle, and I sit through the back door, and he's really good there. But I was able to get his leg across and hook it with my bottom leg, or hook his bottom leg. And, you know, that's a finish that we spent a lot of time working on at Cornell because we had a lot of guys who shot low ankle shots. And, you know, that was when Funk was really starting to pick up and people were starting to dive over top and grab ankles and things. So you had to be really good in that position. And so I ended up scoring that takedown, riding him out for the last 13 seconds or whatever it was. And I think that was the biggest turning point in the match. Then I can't remember if I went down or he, I think I went down right after that. I got an escape. I was up 4-2. He had actually ridden me for a little bit of time. I think it was about a minute, but on the riding time was only like 40 seconds maybe.
Yeah.
And then he went down and I was riding him, you know, mat returning him. I was getting to my claw series, I was getting to my half series, and you know, I was doing really well. And you know, I got hit for stalling. You know, I had half Nelson. I just put him down. I was running out to the side with a half Nelson. The ref called me for stalling. So I was like, well, what the heck? Yeah. So I was like, all right, well, I can't do that anymore. Like, this ref is like going to hit me for stalling again. I can't give him another stalling point. I can't give him a stalling point. So I changed it up. He ends up getting to his feet, gets an escape. You know, I try to mat return the wrong way. And he gets out. So it's 4-3, but I had accrued enough riding time. So effectively, I was winning 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wrestling. I get, you know, he pushes me to the edge. He's shooting. I'm down blocking. And, you know, he starts to circle out. I circle back in and I get into his leg and he kind of kicks out of bounds. I'm like, wasn't that, you know, I thought that was stolen. And, you know, they didn't hit him. And, you know, I think they blew the whistle a little too quick, but who cares? Go back to the center. He's shooting. Gets to my leg and, you know, I have to swipe his back hand from reaching and grab my back ankle. So yeah. I swipe his back hand, end up in a wizard. You know, we go out of bat. He kicks his feet out of bounds. Then 3 seconds left, I get my hand raised and, you know, I run into the crowd and celebrate with my family.
Yeah, that was an incredible match. So Rob Cole and Mike Gray are the coaches behind Cornell. What are they like as coaches and what do they do for you?
Rob is kind of like, you know, behind the scenes, he's kind of putting pieces in place, making sure that, you know, we have the right guys in the right positions to do the right things and making sure that, you know, we're recruiting the right type of person that's going to thrive in this environment. And the environment is, it's tough. You got to be focused, you know, you got to have the highest level of focus for both school and wrestling if you want to be great. And, you know, finding those guys is not always easy. You know, there's some guys who want to just focus on wrestling and don't really care about school. There's other guys who only want to go to school and wrestling is kind of just an afterthought. So we have to find those right pieces and really nurture that and get them to be, get the best out of them. And Rob does a really good job with that. Mike is, you know, in the practice room all the time, running practice, running individuals, making sure that everyone's where they need to be. And then Gabe is our like head of recruiting. He's constantly calling all of our recruits and making sure that, you know, they know that we want them there and, you know, building a relationship with them so that when they come on an official visit, they come to campus, they feel like they've already been there and can spend a lot of time, you know, getting to know the guys and getting to see the campus and really get a feel for what our program means and what we stand for.
Yeah, for sure. So you won 4 national championships at 4 different weights. A lot of people believe that you have one of the best folk style careers ever. Where do you think you stand in those rankings and why?
I think that my career will never be duplicated ever again. I don't think there's anybody that's going to be able to go in four different weight classes and win four national titles. I just don't think it'll happen. There's too many like weird variables that go on to do that. You have to cut a bunch of weight and then go up, or you just have to be willing to go up. And, you know, once you get into the upper, you know, to that, those higher weights, you know, the jumps are a lot bigger. So it makes it a little bit more difficult. So I don't think anybody's going to, you know, I don't know of anybody who's all American at three different weight classes. Actually, yeah. Bo did. So Bo, I think he was a national finalist at 74, and then 84 he won, and then 97 he won. But that's a huge accomplishment. Not many people have done that. You guys will have to go look up the records or the statistics or get someone to do it for you and see how many people have done that.
Not a lot.
But, you know, four All-American at four different weight classes is crazy. National champion at four different weight classes is even crazier. You know, sometimes I look back at my career, I'm like, what did I do? That is insane. And at the same time, you look at what Kale did, and he won at he went undefeated. And that's like, he had no blemishes. He beat everybody that stepped on the mat with him. And he wrestled a ton of matches too. So, you know, I think that each of us have a little bit different of a hold on history. And, you know, in my opinion, if someone's going to break one or, you know, match one of our records, I think that someone being undefeated, four-time national champion, is going to happen before someone is a four-time NCAA champion at four different weights.
Yeah. Because like you said, there's like so many different variables that go into that. Like, you need to be a late bloomer. Because most people can't, like, go in 4 years from 141 to 165, like,
yeah.
You know, and I think a big thing for me was that I didn't redshirt. So had I redshirted, I probably, you know, I definitely want to wrestle 141. I probably, after my senior year, I wouldn't have gone to 174 because I had goals to wrestle at the senior level at 163. So I just think that there was – it kind of just everything set perfectly for me to make that happen. And there's just too, like, you know, there's too many variables. You have to be a late bloomer, but you have to be, you know, willing to not take that red shirt. You know, your coaches haven't have enough confidence in you coming out of high school that you can do it. And so there's just a lot that goes into it, but you know, it could happen. I being in the college ranks and watching college wrestling for a long time and, you know, seeing the development of people, it would be very difficult.
Yeah, it would be pretty hard to do. But so you've won national championships, world championships, U.S. Open championships, and more. What else do you think you have to do to cement your legacy and make your way to the Mount Rushmore of wrestling, as people would say?
Yeah, I just think, you know, Olympic champion is the last step, and you know, I was really looking forward to getting it done in 2020. But with this whole thing that happened, you got to adapt and move. And that's what makes wrestlers so great, is their ability to adapt to new circumstance. And, you know, whatever's thrown at you, whether it was, you know, wrestling is going to be dropped in 2013 from the Olympic Games to, you know, this pandemic pushing the Olympic Games back the year. You know, there's always something that's outside of your control, and you kind of got to just roll with the punches. You got to roll with the punches, be able to adapt and overcome those difficult circumstances.
Yeah, for sure. So would you say would you consider retiring once you win an Olympic medal?
I don't think so. I feel like I'm scratching the surface of my ability. You know, there's a lot of things that I see within myself that I can improve on in terms of, you know, the way my body moves, the technique that I hit. You know, obviously there's a lot of positives that come out of it, but a part of me is a little bit of a perfectionist. And, you know, if I can reach my absolute best, that's what I'm going to try to do. And, you know, right now I'm better than I've ever been. But in my, you know, I'm my own biggest critic. So I see certain things. I'm like, you know, I could do this better. I could do that better. You know, there's certain things that I could do here and here. You know, there's so many little things that I think I can improve on, that I feel like I would want to see all that through. But obviously I have a family, so I have to consider them. But in the current climate that we're in, I feel like I will be able to compete past 2021.
Okay. Yeah. So the first freestyle event I ever went to was the World Team Trials in 2013 in Oklahoma. There you wrestled Andrew Howe in a 10-minute match where they had overtime at that trials. What was that match? So why was that match so long? And what was that match like going into, you know, 10 minutes? That's pretty long time.
Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, you know, most people would agree who have wrestled Andrew Howe that he is like the most, he's the worst person you could possibly wrestle in terms of like putting pain on you. Cause he is, you know, he goes so hard. He's so strong. You know, he's got a punishing hand fight. He has punishing leg defense. And he's really, really good. So that year, USA Wrestling decided that they were going to change the rules. So they were just like, you know what, we're not going to follow the, at the time it was FILA. We're not going to follow FILA rules. We're going to, you know, add in overtime. And yeah. I think the reason for that was that they were trying to show the Olympic committee, like, hey, we are willing to adapt and, you know, make it better. So they ended up just having a running clock. They didn't have any, you know, they didn't say, okay, it'll be a 1 minute overtime. And then if after that 1 minute overtime, you know, it's over, we're going to go back to criteria. We're going to give an extra point so that the scoreboard shows, you know, 7-6 rather than 6-6. Yeah. So they had changed it up on me and I ended up having to wrestle Andrew in like this ridiculously long match. I think that was in the semis. And then I had to wrestle David right after.
Yeah.
So I had a brutal day that day, in terms of just like competing for a long time and, you know, wrestling guys who are, you know, Andrew was a world team member. David Taylor was a, you know, obviously a world champion. And then I forget who I wrestled the first round, if it was Dave Marable, who was a world team member, or if it was Trent Paulson, who was a world team member.
I think it was Paulson. Cause I think I saw something about it on Flow.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, so I was I had to wrestle this monster the whole day. And then that overtime match, it was like wrestling two matches in a row. Yeah. And then, you know, had to go later. I went back to the hotel and wrestled or rested for a couple hours. And then I was had to be back in the gym ready to wrestle best two out of three.
Yeah, that's crazy how like doing the, especially against like you said, like a guy like Andrew Howe, who's like one of those guys.
Yeah,
who just like is like annoying to wrestle, because like and then having to wrestle the at the time pound for pound best in the world.
Yeah,
that was tough. That was a crazy tournament, crazy circumstance. And you know, I went into that thing thinking, you know, I can do this. Like this is something that, you know, I can do. I can wrestle five matches in a day. Like that's no problem for me. Like I can do that. And you know, looking back at it, I was like, man, that was crazy.
Yeah,
I can't believe I tried to do that. I can't believe that was the rules back then. And you know, but that's at the time you don't know, like you just go out and you compete and you try to, you know, you try to put your best foot forward and that's what you're trying to do. So that's kind of where I was at. And, you know, I wanted to go out and compete to the best of my ability. I thought I could, you know, wrestle at a high level. And I did wrestle at a high level in those matches, but obviously fell a little bit short.
Yeah. So like you said, then you wrestled JB. So you did not beat him, but you had some sparks and highlights of that match as you were up in, I think this was the first match. And then where you threw JB into like the table,
mm-hmm.
When you threw him in the table, did that give you confidence going into future and the whole match? Do you think you established yourself as a real contender in the freestyle scene?
Yeah. I mean, I felt like I knew that I was a contender. I knew I was right there. You know, I ended up, so JB and I actually went into an overtime match too, that match.
Which you would have won if it was how it was now.
Yeah, had they had the criteria, which were the rules at the time. It wasn't even like the rules now. At the time, the rules were for Fila and UWW now that, you know, it was based on criteria, last point or biggest point, you know, wins. Yeah. And, but that was when they changed the rules so that it couldn't end in criteria. They had to have an overtime. So then it ended up being an overtime. I got into a position. It was a folk style position, actually. You know, I got to my claw and my thigh pry, and I'm like, oh, I could, you know, I can score this, and ended up, you know, he, that's not two and freestyle. And he ended up scoring the points. So, you know, that, there was definitely a little bit of freestyle savviness, if you will, that I missed there. But again, it was a wrestling match. There was takedowns, and I just fell short.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That was an awesome match for sure.
So, your specialized move, or like your, what, I'm not going to say your number one, but like most, a move that most people see, and that's like, say, oh, that's Kyle Dake's move, is the chest wrap.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of not really a typical freestyle move.
You mean folk style?
Oh yeah, folk style, excuse me. Where do you say you start perfect? Where would you say you started perfecting that move?
I honestly don't know. Like, I don't know when the, like, I'd have to go back and watch all my freestyle matches from 2013 until, you know, 2014, 15 to see when I really started hitting it a lot. But, you know, I was, you know, I always had a pretty good front headlock. And I had a Greco background, so I was pretty good at throwing. So I knew how to, I knew where my hips needed to go in order to gain leverage. And, you know, basically a front headlock chest wrap is that, that's at the pinnacle of it. It's like, you need to know where your hips have to go, and you need to know how to create pressure and when to pop your hips through and all sorts of different things. And, you know, I think that, you know, the reason I'm known for it is that I hit JB with it, and then I hit it on Takatani at the World Cup. So I think that was kind of just like the highlight reel that everyone chose to jump on, because it was a high flying move. You know, you're sending it, you're lifting the guy off his feet, sending him through the air. It's fun to watch that. So I don't know where it developed. I just know that I'm pretty good in that position. When the guy gets to my legs, figuring out how to navigate and put pressure on him.
Yeah, for sure. That famous picture of you having him lifted up in the air. I think, wasn't that, didn't you say that was on the bus of the Spartan combat?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, they put it on the side of the Sprinter van. So we have like a 12 passenger van that we use to take guys to tournaments. And they put the logo on there this year. It's pretty funny.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that must be weird, riding in a van with a picture of you on it.
I haven't ridden it yet. I need to ride it. That's okay. What I need to do. I need to ask my wife if I can put it on the side of her car, you know, so she's driving around with me all the time.
Seriously.
Well, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. So what do you, so you've already won 2 world championships, as most people know. Do you notice anything different about like international wrestlers from American wrestlers?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is that most American wrestlers still have that a little bit of a folk style feel, you know, and they wrestle in folk style. You have to wrestle hard, like top bottom wrestling is ridiculously hard. So, you know, when you're wrestling in those positions and you're having to work, you know, for a full 7 minutes or 6 minutes in high school, you know, you have to, there's never taking your foot off the gas pedal. And when you wrestle internationally, there's, you know, they have a 30 second break in the middle. They have, you know, their techniques are more about flash and flare, rather than just like, you know, a stand up is like the most basic move. You have to get out, and it takes a ton of effort to do that. Or, you know, a mat return, you don't get any points for that, but there's just like, it takes a lot of effort to get there. So I think that, that mentality is what the biggest difference is between, you know, freestyle and folk style from American point of view to, you know, a European or Asian point of view.
Yeah. So kind of like a following question going along with that, where do you see the U.S. ranked in freestyle?
I think I think with our teams were right there in the top three for sure. Russia is shown itself to be number one the past several years. Team USA did win the world championships in Paris in 2017. And then in 2018, when I won, Jaden won, David won, it came down to, I think if Kyle would have beat Sagilayev that year, we would have won the tournament as well. But we have guys who are winning medals at every single weight class. We have guys who are wrestling at a high level and, winning world titles. So we're certainly right there in terms of the best country in the world when as far as wrestling goes, freestyle wrestling goes.
Yeah, you guys could potentially, or team, we could potentially have like every single weight medalist, like at 57, like Vito, Spencer Lee, Dayton Fix, Gilman, all those guys, and like 65 Yanni, or
We have a lot of depth,
and then 74 you, and then I'm just that's stacked like around the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of good guys. We have, I think, with Gilman's a finalist.
Yeah.
65. James Green's a finalist. He's going down to 65. Then you have me and JB, world champs. David Taylor, world champ. Jane Cox, Kyle Snyder, world champ. And then you have Nick Wisdowski, who's a two-time bronze medalist. Plus you have Gail Stevenson, Mason Paris, all those guys that are there now. So we have a lot of guys who are going to compete at a high level. And I feel like we are growing as a country where we're getting, these young guys coming up. And I was one of those young guys coming up through the ranks is like, he eventually could be really good. And same with David, Jaden, Kyle. You see that all the time. And now you're seeing it with these younger guys, Yanni, Vito, Spencer Lee, Gable Stevenson. I'm sure I'm missing a ton of guys, but
yeah,
all these young guys coming through who are just – beasts, and they're like, wow, these guys are gonna make a big splash and do some really big things. I don't know if I mentioned Vito. I think Vito is right there to make the Olympic team.
Oh yeah, for sure.
To compete, it's like
Vito is looking.
He's gotten so much better, and I'm really excited for April. I'm excited to compete, but afterwards, I'm excited to go back and watch all those big time matchups and be like, what happened there? Like. And that's one of the cool parts of being in these events is, you're sitting in the back, you're in the staging area, and then all of a sudden you hear the crowd just go nuts. It's like, well, what happened? what's going on here? And, as a fan, if you're in the stands, you get to see everything and, see the high level wrestling. But as a competitor, you don't really get to see any of that. You kind of just focus on your matches and you don't really see what else is going on until, the next week. You go back and watch it.
Yeah. I know that's the worst. And like you have a good friend wrestling like right before you, and you don't really want to like go crazy cheering for them because your match is like right after that.
Yeah. That's always been a big thing. Like in college, we had my junior year, we had three national champs. And I was like so thankful that I went first, and I was the first one to win a national title. Then my two buddies won, and I was able to go nuts. But when they were watching me, they couldn't really watch because they were just like, "Okay, Kyle won, good. I have to go wrestle now.
Yeah.
This is the biggest match of my career too." So those are learning experiences that you'll get to eventually.
Yeah. So like you said, I agree. When I saw Vito versus Sammy Alvarez, I thought he looked amazing, and then I see him at the RTC Cup. And he just keeps getting better. I know he's gonna be good, really good, I believe.
Yeah, he's fast. He's explosive. He's good. Like he's just good in all positions. He's fun to watch.
He seems strong too. Like not like natural strength, but like wiry strength. Like
he's wiry. He's got that. Yeah. He's got those small, tiny hands. He's like a little Russian defect who came from.
Yeah. I have a question.
Soviet Union.
When I see him wrestling, he always has like. Do you notice that he always has his hand up?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. He's got that little hook there. He's trying to catch himself a little fish.
Yeah, no, I always feel like, wow, what is he doing? So you and David Taylor has been a fierce competitors, and throughout the years, And I guess you were friends then, but now it even seems you guys are quite really good friends now. You guys wrestled when you were kids and, you know, all the way up through college, you know, a couple times mm-hmm. in the freestyle scene. How's that relationship now and how did that come together, I guess?
So in 2016 was the last time we competed. We both went 86. And then the next year they had the non-Olympic weight class, 79 kilos added in. So, and that was more of a natural fit for me. 86 was too big, especially with night before weigh-ins. You know, trying to wrestle Jaden, he weighed probably 210 pounds and I weighed 175. And, you know, it was hard for me to wrestle at the Olympic team trials. And so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to wrestle my natural weight and we'll do it that way. And there was a bunch of factors to go into it, why I went up, you know, just the circumstances that USA Wrestling had in place and just to make a team and things like that. So, you know, now that David and I are at separate weight classes, you know, we spent a lot of time training together because we were both on the team that year in 2018 after they added the weight classes. So he obviously stayed at 86. I went down to 74, then back up to 79. So it was just like, okay, you know, we're going to be at these training camps together. We might as well train, you know, and get better. So, you know, we were training every time we were at camp, we probably wrestled, you know, every other day and getting different looks and trying to develop things. And after practice, we'd come together and be like, all right, you know, what did you do here? How did you, you know, how do you navigate this position? How do you navigate this position? You know, what are you doing with your hands? What are you doing with your feet? Just little things like that. And, you know, like you said, I've known him since I was a kid. You know, he beat my butt when we were in Pee Wee's. So, you know, he was always a guy that I wanted to train with and compete with and, you know, just improve.
Yeah. I saw you guys wrestled at Fargo and I think 2006 where you got third and he got first, but you did get I read that you got a 5-point throw on him. Is that 5-point throw something you bring up on him?
No, well, kind of. So back then it was periods. So we were wrestling in Greco and I had thrown him for five. So I won that period. Okay. And then I threw him to his back again for three that time. And cause it was 3 points for feet to back, but he grabbed, and I had him pinned. I was going to pin him. He grabbed my leg and rolled me through and it was Greco. I'm like, he can't do that. And the refs didn't call it. And I ended up losing that period and then lost the match. But, so I always bring up the fact that he always leg fouled me and I always ask him if he wants to wrestle a Greco match again. And he always declines.
You think you got David and Greco?
Oh yeah, I think I got.
Didn't you come back and try to wrestle Greco?
So in 2015 was it? I think it was 2015. I wrestled Arsen Jovlakayan, who was a world champion in Greco. He's from Armenia. He's actually a really intelligent guy. I think he knows like six different languages. I don't know if he's still competing, but he's in Armenian government now. And he's, you know, he's just a really intelligent guy. And, you know, that was like my first time coming back to wrestle Greco in a long time. And I wrestled pretty well. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I was in the match and he ended up turning me pretty, you know, two times. I turned him once and ended up losing, but so that was my little Greco stint right there. And there was a couple times where, you know, I dabbled in it. And we have Coach Ahad, who he was a three-time Olympian for Iran and Greco, and he actually is our one of my coaches now, and he still coaches our Greco guys, and but he's also with the freestyle team as well. But he actually went out hunting with me today, so we were out nice. In the woods together.
All right, that's awesome. So, you know how Pat Downey, he wrestled in the Wrestling Underground card? He did one period Greco and one period freestyle. Would you ever consider doing a match like that?
Yeah, I would do that. And you know, I'd rather just wrestle a full Greco match and then a full freestyle match. But, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool event.
Do you want to wrestle me in it? Is that what you're asking? Are you challenging me right now?
Yeah, well, what you doing?
No, I'm just kidding. But say you had to wrestle, what's that really good Greco guy?
There's a bunch. We have a
Kamala Bay.
Kamala Bay, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a high flyer. He wrestles at a high pace.
Yeah.
He does a lot of cool moves.
Seriously.
I just hope he wouldn't hit me with any of them.
It'll be fun to watch that way for sure.
Ravon, too.
Yeah.
Would you wrestle him? One period Greco, one period freestyle?
I'll wrestle anybody. I don't know. For sure. Yeah, I'll wrestle anybody.
All right. Nice. So we were talking about your weight. I was on the wrong thing. So you have kind of established yourself as a full 79-kilo wrestler. And for the Olympic trials, you're going to make your way down to 74 kilos. What adjustments do you think you have to make in, like, your diet and your training to make that weight?
Not a lot. You know, for 79, I'm pretty much just weigh about 178 pounds. So the weight class is 174. So it doesn't take much for me to get down. And then when I get down to 163, I have a history of being able to lose a lot of weight, but I get my weight down to about 172, 173, where I'm just sitting there and, I'm fully hydrated. I'm eating full meals and, there's just a little small adjustments that I'll make in terms of portion size. And then also when I eat, how much I'm eating at what time. And then make small adjustments to your training schedule, where normally you would, try to, maintain or put on muscle or, whatever. Now you're trying to pull your weight down and shed some fat. So there's just little tiny things that will make those adjustments. Those are things that you kind of pick up and learn, but just by doing it. For me, learning my body, learning what foods, are nutrition, have the most nutritional value, and make me feel the best when I'm competing, and training, and, what foods are, kind of stay away from. Obviously you got to stay away from, cakes and pasta when you're trying to lose weight. So.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm assuming that some of your main partners are Gabe and Max. And some bigger guys. With you going down 74 kilograms, do you have to adjust to, like, lighter partners?
A little bit, yeah. Because when I'm wrestling Gabe, his weight class is 189. So he weighs probably 200, 205 when he's wrestling at that weight class. Max is a little bit smaller. He probably weighs 195. But I do, those guys, those are pretty big guys, it's 30 pounds bigger at least than the guys I'm going to compete against. So, we have a few guys that are around that weight class, that I can wrestle with. We have a couple of guys from, other countries come in and wrestle with us that are closer to those weights. And then obviously I have Yanni and Evan Henderson. And, we have a few guys who are, on the Cornell team that are around that weight that are pretty tough.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Evans, he's been looking good too. What is one
over? Yeah, what's his name? Evans been wrestling a beast. He
did he get third at the what's it
he
called?
Got second. He got second. Second at the U.S. Open, and then he wrestled Estimandia at the Flow Wrestling event, and now he's wrestling the A-man bracket. So we're excited to watch him compete. I like to think that he's gotten a lot better since his time at Cornell. So. Hopefully this is another stepping stone towards, his goals.
Yeah, for sure. He beat Etchemendy by, like, I think 5. And Etchemendy almost beat James Green. So
yeah, that was a close match. James was, James ended up getting that double leg to a lace. That's kind of his patented thing. So, Anthony – if you watch the match, you can see how upset he was at the end. He's like, how did I, let this
slip? Yeah, 15 right seconds there. Away.
So, it's that weight class. There's a lot of parity, and you're going to see a lot of those guys clash at the Olympic team trials. And, I think a lot of it's going to have to do with where guys are seated and who matches up well with who.
Yeah, sure. All right. So let's talk about, like, kind of your life a little. So, who creates your training plan, and, like, what does an average day consist of? And do you do a lot of group practices, or is most of your training self-run?
So I do most of my planning in terms of what I'm going to do and what positions I'm going to focus on and what areas I'm going to work on. And then I wrestle in our RTC practice. So Coach Gray will run that RTC practice and he'll put us through, you know, whatever drills and stuff. And, you know, when we get into the sparring, you know, we have 40 minutes to free spar where, you know, Gabe and I are just working on certain things and we're wrestling in certain positions and, you know, it depends week to week. And, you know, most of it is predicated on, you know, what did I do well the day before, the week before when we wrestled live? What didn't I do so well? What are positions that I'm missing? What video did I watch that I wanted to, you know, okay, I'm going to add this to my competition schedule or to my repertoire, what my competition schedule looks like. So, you know, if I'm competing shortly, then my training schedule is going to look a little bit different. But yeah, for the most part, I handle my training schedule.
Okay, nice. So say you want to get like a one-on-one practice in with just like you and a partner, who would that partner be like usually? Who's like your main partner?
It depends. My two main partners are Gabe and Yanni. So if we're doing, you know, if I'm trying to get a one-on-one practice where I need to go really hard and, you know, I need someone to really push me and, you know, challenge me in certain positions, you know, wrestle with Gabe if I'm working on technical stuff. It's not that Yanni doesn't go really hard, because he does go really hard. It's just that he's so much lighter that, you know, it doesn't, my heart rate doesn't spike as high.
Yeah.
The amount of effort I have to put in is a little bit less with Yanni. But, you know, he's technically really, really good. So, you know, if he gets into a certain position, you know, let's say he hits a swim high crotch or, you know, he gets into a single leg, you know, if he gets his hand locked and he has good position, well, I basically count that as a takedown for him. So it's like, oh, okay, now I'm down 2-0. So I have to keep, you know, keep wrestling out of it. Whereas when I'm wrestling with Gabe, you know, he gets to the position like that, I'm fighting like crazy. And I'm like, he didn't score yet. Like, this is no points. And, you know, I'll get to my, you know, my wizard sprawl, you know, whatever, chest wrap, front headlock and be like, oh, okay, that was it. So there's just certain mental battles, certain mental places that you put yourself in order to make improvements with one guy or another.
Yeah. So in the summer, you had a summer prep. Yeah, right. You wrestled Chimizo at the Flow Wrestling event. What was the experience there like, and what was it like wrestling again? And what did you think your performance there too?
It was kind of crazy, you know, wrestling in a small venue like that, lights burning down on you, no crowd. It was just like, it was super intimate. It was like I was wrestling in my living room. It was kind of crazy. But, you know, leading up to the match, I cut my eye open pretty bad. And so I had to go get stitches. And this was like 11 days before I was supposed to compete. So I took a couple of days off. And, you know, it kind of worked out when my schedule. So I had the weekend off so I could do some cross training leading up to it. And then that next week I go to wrestle again. And, you know, I'm drilling, I'm feeling okay. And I just get tapped in the eye. Breaks open again. Like, ah. And I glue it shut up. But I'm like, I can't take time off. So, I tape my whole head up. I got it all glued up. And I'm wrestling again. I have a light drill day and I'm like, okay, this is okay. And then the next day again, boom, cuts it open again. So I'm like, I need to let this heal. Cause if I have to get more stitches, I'm going to have like this droopy eye. It was just like hanging over my eyelid. And so I ended up taking a little bit of time off before wrestling, which isn't ideal. When you're leading a huge match like that, you want to be, you know, sharp and crisp leading into those matches. So, again, that's like the situation where you roll with the punches. So whatever hand you're dealt, you got to roll with it and you got to be able to adapt and compete. And so, you know, obviously wrestling Frank, he is one of the best in the world, right? So yeah. He is, you know, he's what, taken a silver the past 2 years at the world championships. He's been a world champion. He's taken a bronze and, you know, he's just been, you know, he's been a staple on the world scene for a long time. So, you know, being able to go out and compete against him was a lot of fun to see, you know, where I stood, because it had been 6 months since I had competed last, and you know, so having another opportunity to compete was pretty cool. And you know, that was the first event that they had put on, and you know, I was like, yeah, definitely, you know, for sure, I want to be a part of it. I want to be, you know, part of this first event and make it happen. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a pretty nice, fun match to watch.
So let's talk about your 2019 World Team Trial wrestle-off against Alex Deringer. So you had an injury that made you delay the match. What injury did you have, and how bad was it?
So we had these two guys on our team, two heavyweights. Mm-hmm. We were wrestling, and then there was only us on the mat. So they were on one side of the mat, we were on the other side. And I turned my back, you know, I had my back to them. I was wrestling my guy, and then one of the guys' double legs flares him out, lifts him up, and lands on the back of my knee.
Ooh.
And so this was, I forget the time frame, but I ended up having to go down to New York City, get it checked out, see what was going on. You know, I left there thinking, oh, okay, you know, I should be back in, you know, a few weeks, we'll be okay, blah, blah, blah. And you know, the guy calls me back, the surgeon, he's like, hey, I consulted with, you know, a bunch of my colleagues, and, you know, they think it would probably be wise to get you back down here and get surgery. So I ended up going down the next week and get surgery on my knee. And, you know, anytime you get surgery, it's a kind of a pain in the butt, no matter how small it is, you know, cause you're going under anesthesia most of the time, and, you know, just like dealing with it, the stress of everything. So I ended up getting surgery and having to take off 5 months, before I get back on the mat. So, that put me in a time frame where, you know, I was only going to have a couple weeks to get ready for, you know, one of the best guys in the world. Alex Deringer was ranked second in the world at the time. Mm-hmm. And, so I was like, well, I need to figure this out. Like, I need to, you know, talk to somebody. So I talked to my coaches, talked with USA Wrestling, Coach Zadek, Coach Russell, and figure out what, you know, what would be best to give me a fair shot. And that's how it's always been. You know, if you win a medal, you know, you get to sit out in the finals. So yeah. If you go back to the same weight class. So if you win a medal, you get to sit out in the finals. And that's what I did. I got to sit out. And if you are already in the finals, you're granted a couple extra perks, basically, because they're like, this guy can win medals. And that's the most important part for USA Wrestling, want to win medals. Mm-hmm. And so one of the perks is that if you're injured, you can request a delayed wrestle off. So I ended up requesting a delayed wrestle off, and then we wrestled off in Texas. And the best 2 out of 3 down there, and I was able to get the job done.
For sure.
You
want to do this one?
Yeah. At Combat RTC, how much interaction do you have with the Cornell wrestling team?
So right now, Cornell's not actually having a season. So we have some guys who are not able to compete for under the Cornell flag, basically. So they're with us. And, so we spent a lot of time with them, and I'm on coaching staff, or I was, so I spent a lot of time with them.
Yeah. So yeah, you just said they're not having a season with the Ivy League canceling, you know, all winter sports, which is sad in my opinion. So Cornell's not having any workouts or all the athletes just doing workouts on their own.
Yeah, pretty much. So they qualify for the RTC. They can do RTC workouts. But for the most part, they're just on their own.
No,
they still have, like, they can go in and get their team lifts on. So right now is like a weird time. I'm so far removed from it right now that, like, I don't know what their schedules are. So I'm pretty sure that they've already had their – so after Thanksgiving, they kind of just come back and do like online class and have like final projects and things. And then they're off campus until the spring semester. Starts back up at the end of January. So a lot of these guys are doing what they normally we would just be in Freedom Wrestling Center, but we can't be there. So they're still doing their cross training and doing everything like that. So they're still getting good workout in, but now their focus has shifted from, you know, NCAAs, EIWAs, you know, winning the Ivy League to, okay, you know, my next competition is going to be a freestyle match. Where can I compete? You know, what can I do to continue to improve so that next year when it comes around, I'm going to be put myself in a position to be the best that I can possibly be.
Yeah, for sure. So you're once you're done wrestling, is there a career path for you of like coaching once you finally hang your shoes up and retire?
Yeah, for sure. I think if that's something I want to do, and go into college coaching, that's certainly on the table, 100%. But yeah, I don't know when that's going to be. I don't know when I'm going to hang them up, and you know, I don't know where I'm going to be in my life, you know, where my family's going to be and what their needs are. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited for it, but living in the moment right now.
Yeah. Do you have like anything else besides wrestling? Do you have like a, you know, I don't know, some people have like what they want to do when they're done, like besides wrestling, anything like projects or anything you do once you finally hang the shoes up?
Yeah, there's a few things. You know, I've always wanted to start a regenerative agriculture farm. So basically making a farm that's self-sustained, and there's very little inputs that you need to put into it. And then, you know, I've also talked about starting a health center, something like that, where, you know, you can come and actually get, you know, you get in a sauna, bathtub, you know, basically like a Russian banya, but with my own little, you know, my own little twists, you know, the protocols that I follow and putting them in place there. So there's a few things that I've always thought about and like, you know, no, that would be really cool to do. But we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So would there be any advice you would like to give to like young wrestlers who want to go out and wrestle like on the college scene and on the senior level?
Yeah, I would say, you know, keep having fun. That's a big, big portion of it. If you're not having fun, then, you know, you're not going to try to get better. You're going to kind of stall out and you'll be like, I don't really want to do this. And you'll get discouraged. And that's what happens with a lot of kids. You know, they'll be really good and then they'll get discouraged and they'll just be like, oh, I don't want to do it anymore because, you know, maybe they lost or maybe they're not getting any better or they lost to a guy they should have beat. But that's one thing. Another thing is to, you know, try to keep getting better. Keep going out, keep, you know, learning from everybody. You know, one of my biggest things was I would learn from the worst guy on our team. Like, okay, what's the absolute best move that you hit? Teach me how you do it. And, you know, if taking that approach is trying to learn from every single person that you wrestle, that you practice with, that you're coached by, that makes a big difference because there might be a small little nuance that you pick up that you didn't know was there, that you're going to need, you know, 3 years from now, and it's going to make the biggest difference when you're out there, you know, whether it be at a state tournament, national tournament, NCAA, you know, quarterfinals, semifinals, or trying to make a world Olympic team. So try to learn from as many people as you can and have fun while you're doing it.
Yeah, for sure. So Kyle, I think that's pretty much all we have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a pleasure, to say the least.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad to be here.
No, yeah, for sure. Yeah, good luck for everything in the future, the Olympic trials, and everything else you plan to do from now on.